So what I do is I go on Facebook and tell Facebook that I'm selling a weight loss program. What Facebook is going to do is, oh, okay, yeah, I have this database of people who are interested in weight loss stuff, and then they show my ad to those people. And that's how Facebook make a lot of money. Hi, and welcome to another wonderful episode of How We Build Web3 in Africa. Today, we're going to be going back to the basics. I mean, we're there last week, but today we're also going back to the basics. And if you haven't listened to the last week episode, it is what is blockchain? And in my opinion, it is the simplest explanation you will ever find on the internet. What we're trying to do there is to explain blockchain so my grandma would understand. And actually, we're taking that same approach in today's episode. And we're talking about what is Web 3.0. We want to talk about why it exists, why we are so excited about it, and what the 3.0 doing in front of web, right? And if I do my job here well, you should be able to understand it, even if you are like my grandma. As usual, my name is Daniel Kobari, and I'm here with George Mosomi. George, how are you doing today?
Daniel, I am great. And as always, it's a pleasure to be here to share some of this information that we take for granted. And just to get right into it, you know, we have all these iterations or numbers that we've put against this Web 1, Web 2, Web 3. And I think today what we want to do is to make sure that you leave this episode understanding where each of those levels represented and what it means for the future. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. we can just kick off right to Web 1. When Web 1 was being made, no one even referred to it as Web 1. It was basically the first iteration of the internet. It was whereby you would go to the connected computers and pick up information that was static. It was information that you were reading from a database. There was really no direct way of communicating with that information or changing it. That came in a little bit later, which I'll come to, which is now referred to as Web 2. Daniel, do you want to tell us a little bit about anything more about that Web 1.0?
Yeah, sure. So Web 1.0 was really just hyperlinks. So they are kind of like highways that we just have like an interconnecting road to different highways. So it's just a way where each pages on the internet could actually be found and are connected to hyperlinks. So that was Web 1.0. It's basically just static page. So to make you understand what I mean. So it's like you going to look for a news article online, right? Or you going to read your favorite blog, something.
Yeah, in the same way, I like to look at it as, imagine how it was when you were in primary school. It was one-way direction. The teacher would tell you, George, this is 1+1, this is 2+2, and it is equal to 4.
Yeah.
There was no feedback loop of saying, okay, teacher, maybe I want to look at 2 times 3, which is equal to 6.
They would spank you if you tried that.
Yes. Are you talking back to your teacher? So 2 times 2 is 4, 2+2 is 4. And that was basically you were getting information, picking up information from this system, which has a storage of X amount of information.
So basically, what we're trying to get at is there's no way for we, the users, to be able to impute our own information, kind of like the way we know the internet of now, which is Web 2.0. We can go in and send comments, right? We can go in and put in our own posts, kind of like where we see. So Web 2.0 is basically, social media is like a perfect example, right? We can have people sending their own thoughts, like on LinkedIn, like on Facebook, like on Twitter. You can post in your thoughts, people can comment on that, and people can post theirs, right? It became more of an interactive technology.
Web 2 is very powerful, and that's the era that we're living in right now. The reason why it's powerful is it has given people the opportunity to create data where you, as Daniel mentioned, you have your social media platforms, you have the ability to monetize some of those social media platforms But the interesting thing is that it comes from a level whereby you have platforms, centralized platforms like the ones we've mentioned, Facebook, LinkedIn, social media like Twitter, all the ones that you all know. You have these centralized platforms which now are the ones which store some of that data. As you generate it, the data is written, you get to read it. And I like to think of it as a group assignment in secondary school. So you have you have all of us working on a group project, and then each one of us submits that group project to the school teacher. Then the school teacher is able to tell us like, oh, okay, if you want to look at this other assignment, you can come here and read. This is what, say, Daniel stored. And I've given him 10 marks out of 10. You know, this is another one from George, and so on and so forth. I think that's, for me, like the simplest way of understanding what Web 2.0 looked like.
So I think one of the biggest thing that comes with Web 2.0 is that it enabled people to be able to create a business out of it. So, for example, we started seeing the internet being used as an online shopping mall. This is where Amazon came from, right? Mm-hmm. So we have people who can actually host their own shop on Amazon. So Amazon became a marketplace where people who want to sell their product can list their product on Amazon. So it became an online shopping mall. We also have a way where internet can be used now as a transportation services. So we have Uber, we have here in Nigeria, we have Bolt is what we call it. We also have like different sort of technology or businesses was able to exist on Web 2.0. So Web 2.0 became really the biggest sort of technological advancement that our era has ever seen. And if you look at the wealthiest companies in the world right now, they're majorly people who built tech during the, because Web 2.0 came around the early 2000, around 2002, 2004. That's where we have apps. Most of the applications we have now, the Uber, Amazon, Facebook, Twitter, all came from that era. And they built out this technology that makes life easy for me, makes life easy for you. It makes it easy for us to, from our home, order for things, and then it comes to us through Amazon, or order for taxi, and they come pick us at our location using Uber or different other softwares online. The reason why we are all making like this big move to Web 3.0, the whole big drive towards that, is Web 2.0 came with its own set of problems. The problem is those data that you and I are putting on their platform. So when I'm chatting with my friends, right, they store this database somewhere in their centralized data centers, right? So they're able to know, using their AI, to know things about me that I don't even know about myself. And as such, they could use this information to monetize, to increase their revenue by giving those data. So for example, the reason why I want to push this is because I'm a digital marketer, so I know a lot of this. So what I do is I go on Facebook and tell Facebook that I'm selling a weight loss program. What Facebook is going to do is, oh, okay, yeah, I have this database of people who are interested in weight loss stuff, and then they show my ad to those people. And that's how Facebook make a lot of money, using the data that I gave them on Facebook. So, John.
Yeah, that's super interesting, Daniel. I've always wondered in this current space, you know, like I've uploaded a bunch of pictures on Facebook, I've uploaded something on Instagram. Yeah. I use Amazon, even though sometimes it struggles to work in Kenya. Who owns this data that I'm contributing to this World Wide Web?
Well, the truth is, belongs to those centralized systems. It's no longer your data. I mean, in quotes, yes. Right? Because they store it, they have the information, they are able to analyze it. I think the main thing that the government in US, speaking about against Facebook, is they don't want them to sell this information to someone else. And then they're trying to tell them to like limit the exposure of how they use those data. But the truth is, the data is free, right? So the application is free for us to use. And the only way that they make money is through ads, right? And the only thing that we, the Web 3.0 guys are fighting against is those money they make. At least some of the things we're fighting against is those money that is made using those ads and all these services that they provide goes to a small portion of the people, when it is us who provide this information. It is us who are actually putting our data in, right? Well, how come we're not getting something out of it?
That's really interesting, Daniel. And I think what you've mentioned is really important, because there's elements of data security, you know, elements of scalability, elements of privacy. And these are the things which has led to what we are now terming as Web3, where certain users, and I think worldwide, everyone is very concerned about what data is going out there now that we have all these social platforms, we have all these marketplaces which are mining our data. So my view or my take is that there needed to be another layer whereby the user controls that data, the user owns the data, and the user is able to fully monetize as much as possible whatever information they are putting out there. So I would want, for example, if my Facebook, my usage patterns on a social media platform, even if they're being captured, that I get the maximum value. It's a monetary value, I would like that to be capitalized onto me. But more importantly, I would like to make sure that if I'm giving specific information, I know where it's going, I know how it's being used, I know who's picking it up, so that I don't feel like I'm a pawn in a large chess game. But Daniel.
You know, before it used to be that those data, once they store it, it is gone. You don't have any way for you to go and erase that data. I think it was sometime in, and I might forget this, sorry, don't quote me on this number, but I think it's around 2014, 15. That is when they made this law that, hey, I should be able to have the right to be able to delete or edit certain data that I've uploaded to those centralized services. And basically, these are much of the problem. I think YouTube particularly tried to do something a little different. So they made the creators on YouTube, so people who are creating videos on YouTube, they give them like 40%, and I might be wrong with the number, right? It might be about 40% of the earnings that Google makes from serving ads to people on their video. So this is why you see a lot of people, that there's a lot of growth happened in YouTube, majorly because of this sharing of revenue with the creators as well. So imagine a world where the creators actually have like 80% instead of say 40% that YouTube gives. And this is one of the major things that Web 3.0 is. And I think it's a beautiful way to segue into Web 3.0. George, you want to take that one?
Yes, for sure. And just to bring back what you said, you know, there's this general data protection regulation, which was implemented by the EU. I think it was early 2010.
That's what I was referring to. What year was that?
Yes, I'm not sure, but I'll check. I think it was initially made in 2016, because I remember I was working in a company where suddenly we were told we have to make sure that any data we're collecting is fully consented by the user. Any programs that we engage with them, we basically went through a full course which was teaching us how to handle people's data. And I found it very important. But there's an element of trust, like it depends on the trust that the other organization is able to implement these things which we've spoken about, like making sure that any data that is being collected is fully consented for and the user has the right to delete and knows exactly where this data is being used. But the flaw with that is that trust element. And that's why Web3 came up out of what seems to be nowhere. And the main purpose was to give that control back to the user rather than to the platforms. Mm-hmm. And when I think about it, you have the Web3 is characterized by this primary element of adding the element to control the data on top of the reading and writing that we had in the previous iterations. Daniel, do you have, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. So I want to really lay the foundation for you guys so you understand. Because last week, we're talking about the blockchain. Again, the blockchain helps us to undergo some certain kind of record keeping without having to trust any central party. Remember, from you see, most of the things we've been talking about here is data that is stored in Facebook's database, like, right? But remember, all of this information can be stored on the blockchain now, because that's what blockchain does. So Web 3.0 is basically saying, you know what? Instead of storing this information in some centralized place, how about we store this information on the blockchain? So we have apps like Facebook that runs, but those information that is being gathered is stored on the blockchain. They have different solutions, which I might go deep into how solutions they are making for social media using the blockchain, but something around social graph. But the big idea here is we don't want to have to trust anybody to be able to handle, that they are going to handle our data the right way, right? We don't want to have to trust that the sort of contribution that we've done in that platform over the years and that has made that platform successful, that they're going to give us a cut of the profit that they're making. We don't have to trust these people. We can have all this thing be stored in the record, which is blockchain, right? And then those things could, using smart contracts, okay, using contracts, right? I don't want to use big words, right? Using some, when you think about contract, the normal contract, okay, if something, certain thing happens, so for example, if George posts 100 times in this platform, then he's entitled to have this sort of revenue. So all this can just be taken care of completely on the blockchain.
That's beautiful, Daniel. That's, I feel like you've given a very succinct and clear explanation of what Web3 is. For viewers and listeners alike, we'd love for you to subscribe, like, share this podcast, share with your friends, your family, because these are the tools that we're trying to expose people to, because we want to build the next Amazons and the next Facebooks and the next Twitters on this technology. And we don't want anyone to be left behind.
Exactly. And you just said something that triggered something in my mind, and I think is worth explaining, right? Like a real practical use of what a blockchain is, or what Web 3.0 could mean for people. So there's this app, it's called Filecoin. It's sort of like a blockchain itself, right? It's a built on the blockchain. And what it does is cloud storage. So it's a decentralized cloud storage. We have basically three giants that controls the cloud storage services in the entire world. We have AWS, which is Amazon. We have Azure, which is Microsoft. And then we have Google Cloud as well. So Google, Amazon, and Microsoft control, they like control 66% of the cloud storage in the entire world. And a program, which is Filecoin, came about. And in less than 2 years, they've been able to increase their storage capacity to about 8 exabytes of data, which is about 1% of the entire cloud storage that exists in the world. And the beautiful thing here is that it is 4,000 times cheaper than AWS. So when you think about it, right? So we have a decentralized way of storing data, which is really, really cheap. Although it still has its issues. I need to say that, right? They're not perfect. They have latency issues. They have issues with file system and all. But when you think about it, that particular service has just been in existence for like 2 years, and they've been able to achieve this much result. Imagine what it's going to be like in the next 6 years. So this is just a perfect example of what Web 3.0 could mean for us as the everyday people.
Thank you. Thank you, Daniel. So next week, we'll be speaking about getting deeper into some of these technologies that we speak about. And we look forward to listening to seeing you.
Sure thing. You guys, again, like, subscribe. If you're watching this on YouTube, like it, hit a comment. Send us a comment on the podcast. If you're, please give us a review. This is how the algorithm lets people know that this is important to you, or this is valuable to you. I need to show this information to more people. Thanks again for coming on listening to us, rather. It's really an amazing one, and we hope to share more. Yeah, you guys can ask us questions in the comments. We'll get that. I think it would actually be a perfect way for us to be able to know the kind of episode that you want us to break down, the terms you want us to break down and all that. All right, so good one. Thanks for you guys listening in, and have a good one, guys.
Thank you.